New Year, same extra value meals at McDonald's. Now get a savory sausage McMuffin with egg, plus hash browns and a small coffee for just $5.
For a limited time only, prices and participation may vary. Prices may be higher in Hawaii, Alaska, and California, and for delivery.
The number one resolution for people last year was to save more money, but nearly half gave up by February. Don't let that be you. Download Rocket Money to reach your financial goals this year. Track your spending, cut waste, and automate savings in one simple app. Rocket Money shows you all your expenses and categorizes them so you know exactly where your money's going and where you're overspending. From there, the app cuts waste by canceling your unused subscriptions and lowering your bills. No customer service needed. With that money freed up, the app will automatically set some cash aside for your goals, whether it's an emergency fund, paying off debt, or saving for vacation. Rocket Money's got you covered. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. And on average, users can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Make saving money a priority this year. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Welcome to another episode of Textory. Textory is a podcast where we read historical texts, we laugh at them, we mock them, or we are just left speechless. So let's jump into it. But before we do, I do have a Patreon. If you enjoy this podcast, you can support me at patreon.com/textory. Let's go. Today, I don't even know how to start this because we are going to be talking about balls, basically. The book we're reading today is from 1866, which, if you're not particularly interested in fashion history, that was like peak crinoline era. And I think it's worth a mention because if there's one thing people struggle with at modern historical balls, if you've ever been to one, it is the size of the participants' dress. There is no logistical nightmare quite like everyone wearing a crinoline. Like, literally, the balls that I've been to, they have a space capacity limit for crinolines. Like, there is much less people that can take part in balls that have crinolines as a dress code. And there is a reason for that, because you would basically just not fit everyone in. Anyway, if you've ever watched a period drama or read a period book, you are probably familiar with like the ball culture. Dances were crucial to Victorians. That was something that everyone was looking forward to. It was a huge part of the higher society. Now, of course, not everyone could participate in like a full-on ball, but even if we were less off or living in the rural society, I think the institution of dancing would still be a massive part of your life and, you know, a perfect opportunity to socialize and or maybe flirt. Not to mention it was simply fun. Like, I often think about how quiet life must have been back then, because you couldn't just play your favorite music when you're working or put on your favorite album when you were cooking. You were not surrounded by music. It was not in the ads. The TV was not on. Whenever you were in like the public space, there was very rarely any music. And whenever you were at home, there was no music unless you could play an instrument yourself. So you were basically reliant on social gatherings to even hear music or to even have that sort of fun. And for richer people, it would be concerts, it would be operas, it would be talented relatives showing off. And for poorer folks, it would be, you know, the musical people in the community that were sort of your gateway to music. And also, obviously, apart from the music, there was this aspect of intimacy that the dancing events brought around. And in other situations, that just did not happen. We like to joke about how they were like, oh my God, I touched his hand. But honestly, in an era where you had to be formally engaged before you could display any sort of PDA, before you could hold a guy's hand, etc., dancing with a guy you liked, that must have been like the sexiest and the most exciting thing. So you can imagine how exciting dances and balls were. I'm kind of sad I've missed out on that feeling, because even though historical balls are absolutely magical nowadays, and I love, love, love the ones I've been to, it's obviously like everyone knows that someone's recording this on their phone. You know, it's not the same vibe. So today we are reading Routledge's Ballroom Companion from 1866. It was a miniature book, apparently. So I'm assuming if you were, you know, on your way somewhere, if you were in the carriage, stressed out and full of social anxiety, you could just read it briefly to sort of like refresh everything and refresh all of the rules. Now, if you've been an event organizer, if you've ever organized an event, you will know that there is basically no resting and a lot less fun when you're the one putting it all together. So, in honor of your struggles, we're starting off with some tips on hosting a ball. How to organize a ball. As the number of guests at a dinner party is regulated by the size of the table, so should the number of invitations to a ball be limited by the proportions of the ballroom. This is basically what I just said about less people being able to take part in a historical ball if crinolines are involved. A prudent hostess will always invite a few more guests than she really desires to entertain, in the certainty that there will be some deserters when the appointed evening comes around. But she will at the same time remember that to overcrowd her room is to spoil the pleasure of those who love dancing. This is probably the most frustrating part of hosting any sort of events, trying to figure out how many people are actually going to be there. Because it's one thing to say, yeah, I'd love to come. Yeah, sure, I'm going to be there. And it's another to have a bunch of people the day or two before be like, you know what, actually, I can't. And I've also been on the other side, like I have been a person that has canceled last minute because something's come up. So I can't really blame anyone for that, but as a host, as an event organizer, is like literally the worst nightmare to have like half the people cancel on you. So I'm assuming it was just as frustrating back then trying to host a ball. A room which is nearly square, yet a little longer than it is broad, will be found the most favorable for a ball. It admits of two quadruple parties or two round dances at the same time. In a perfectly square room, this arrangement is not so practicable or pleasant. A very long and narrow room is obviously of the worst shape for the purpose of dancing, and is fit only for quadruples and country dances. Yeah, I would have thought it's a good room for country dances, but at the time this book came out, 1866, quadruples were more popular. So quadruples were dances that were danced on a square, basically, would have usually four couples dancing in a single setup. I don't know how to explain it. I mean, I've done it before. And then you have different parts of the quadrille. It's very fun. It's a lot of fun, but it's kind of difficult to set up because you need space and you need people to know what they're doing and when they're going, and you don't want people to like bump into the other sets. So it takes up some space to do. Good music is as necessary to the prosperity of a ball as good wine to the excellence of a dinner. No hostess should tax her friends for this part of the entertainment. It is the most injudicious economy imaginable. Ladies who would prefer to dance are tied to the pianoforte, and as few amateurs have been trained in the art of playing dance music with that strict attention to time and accent which is absolutely necessary to the comfort of the dancers, a total and general discontent is sure to be the result. To play dance music thoroughly well is a branch of the art which requires considerable practice. I mean, okay, yeah, let's not have our friends play at balls because then they can't dance and have fun. But also interesting that she said people that played dance music were specifically taught, or maybe they just knew that you had to keep the specific rhythm because otherwise it's all going to be messed up and people are going to mess up the figures. Those who give private balls will do well ever to bear this in mind and to provide skilled musicians for the evening. For a small party, a piano and cornopian make a very pleasant combination. Invitations to a ball should be issued in the name of the lady of the house and written on small note paper of the best quality. Elegant printed forms, some of them printed in gold or silver, are to be had at every stationer's by those who prefer them. The paper may be gilt-edged but not colored. The sealing wax used should be of some delicate hue. An invitation to a ball should be sent cut at least 10 days before the evening appointed. A fortnight, 3 weeks, and even a month may be allowed in the way of notice. Okay, can I just pay your attention to the fact that the invitation to a ball was issued in the name of the lady of the house. Because I think it's really interesting that the responsibility of hosting a ball or any type of social gathering, most of the time it fell on the wife. It fell on the lady of the house. So let's cut this bullshit of, oh, women back then didn't work. It was men who were the providers and the women were just stuck at home and like using perfume and like not doing anything. Even if they weren't taking care of the children, because I'm assuming anyone wealthy enough to afford hosting a ball could also afford like several nannies and people that were basically taking care of that responsibility, they were still working their asses off in the household. They were administering the household. They were responsible for like basically all the administration that goes on in a household this big and this important. So rest assured, 99% of the work for a ball like this was on the lady's shoulders. I don't think the husbands were involved in any way, but maybe like choosing the wine or maybe choosing their male guests. But everything else was the lady's responsibility. And I think it shows in that it was in her name. Like, it wasn't the guy's ball. It wasn't the Mrs. and Mr.'s ball. It was the lady's ball. Not more than 2 or 3 days should be permitted to elapse before you reply to an invitation of this kind. The reply should always be addressed to the lady of the house. The lady who gives a ball should endeavor to secure an equal number of dancers of both sexes. Many private parties are spoiled by the preponderance of young ladies, some of whom never get partners at all, unless they dance with each other. Again, this is something that is still accurate for historical balls, because you either get husbands of some of the ladies and maybe like a couple of gay men, which like, thank God for that. But most of the time, it's never 50-50. It's always more women than men. We need more men in historical dancing community. Like, can we just fix that, please? A room should in all cases be provided for the accommodation of the ladies. In this room, there ought to be several looking glasses, attendants to assist the fair visitors in the arrangement of their hair and dress, and some place in which the cloaks and shawls can be laid in order and found at a moment's notice. Another room should be devoted to refreshments and kept amply supplied with coffee, lemonade, ices, wine, and biscuits during the evening. Where this cannot be arranged, the refreshments should be handed round between the dances. I find the ladies' room really interesting because you would basically have people tending to your hair and, well, not makeup, but dress, which, like, who could afford that? Like, I always wondered, because when you have scenes in period dramas, when someone enters a ballroom, there's always a guy that takes their cloaks and stuff. Where do they take them? How do they know later on whose cloak is which? They don't have those little numbers that you get at a cloakroom. How the hell, in a room of 150 people, did they know which identical top hat is the right one? I just don't get that system.
New Year, same extra value meals at McDonald's. Now get a savory sausage McMuffin with egg, plus hash browns and a small coffee for just $5.
For limited time only, prices and participation may vary. Prices may be higher in Hawaii, Alaska, and California and for delivery.
5 years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all of your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments, so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Great inconvenience is often experienced by the difficulty of procuring cabs at the close of an evening party. These are not the cabs you were thinking about. These were like horse-drawn carriages. Gentlemen who have been dancing and are unprepared for walking object to go home on foot or seek vehicles for their wives and daughters. The best thing that the giver of a private ball can do under these circumstances is to engage a policeman with a lanthorn to attend on the pavement during the evening and to give notice during the morning at a neighboring cab stand so as to ensure a sufficient number of vehicles at the time when they are likely to be required. Okay, so I guess rich people could do anything. They could just hire a policeman to be like, yeah, if you could just like run around the place and tell cab owners that we need cabs, that would be great. Ballroom toilette. The style of a lady's dress is a matter so entirely dependent on age, means, and fashion that we can offer but little advice upon it. That's disappointing. But they lied. They offer some advice. Respecting no institution of modern society, is it so difficult to pronounce half a dozen permanent rules? We may perhaps be permitted to suggest the following leading principles, but we do so with diffidence. Rich colors harmonize with rich brunette complexions and dark hair. Delicate colors are the most suitable for delicate and fragile styles of beauty. Very young ladies are never so suitably attired as in white. That is really true, like every single female character that is under 16 in literature at the time is always dressed in white. And I think it also shows in paintings from the era. White was just such a simple choice. Like, you didn't have to worry about the dress being too gaudy for someone's age. You didn't have to worry about letting them choose the color. You were just like, no, you're gonna wear white. That's it. Ladies who dance should wear dresses of light and diaphanous materials, such as tulle, gauze, crepe, net, etc., over colored silk slips. Silk dresses are not suitable for dancing. A married lady who dances only a few quadrilles may wear a décolleté silk dress with propriety. Now, these are all the subtle nuances that we just don't get over time. We don't have the set of rules that they had, and we just don't understand why one is better than the other. But I'm assuming, you know, light materials would just move nicely when they're dancing. Why would they have to be worn over colored silk slips? I don't know. Why are silk dresses not suitable for dancing? No idea. So all these are sort of lost on me. Very stout persons should never wear white. It has the effect of adding to the bulk of the figure. Love some casual fatphobia in here. Black and scarlet or black and violet are worn in mourning. A lady in deep mourning should not dance at all. As we know, if we've ever read, oh, I want to say Pride and Prejudice so hard, but no, I mean Gone with the Wind. Gone with the Wind is the one I'm looking for. However fashionable it may be to wear very long dresses, those ladies who go to a ball with the intention of dancing and enjoying the dance should cause their dresses to be made short enough to clear the ground. That's a good point. Don't wear very long dresses to dancing. I've made that mistake once. It ended up in literally like someone's arm being in a cast. So let's not go there. If you can, avoid the trains at all costs, or at least have them properly pinned up. We would ask them whether it is not better to accept this slight deviation from an absurd fashion than to appear for three parts of the evening in a torn and pinned up skirt. Oh my god, this is such a brutal read of me, basically. Well-made shoes, whatever their color or material, and faultless gloves are indispensable to the effect of a ballroom toilet. Okay, I don't know. I have to say, the speed with which gloves deteriorate when you're dancing needs to be studied, because I just don't understand. If everyone's wearing gloves, why are mine so dirty? I just don't get it. Etiquette of the ballroom. Now that's what I'm talking about, baby. How to behave in a ballroom. On entering the ballroom, the visitor should at once seek the lady of the house and pay his respects to her. Having done this, he may exchange salutations with such friends and acquaintances as may be in the room. If the ball be a public one, a gentleman desires to dance with any lady to whom he is a stranger. He must apply to the master of ceremonies for an introduction. Can we please bring this back? Can we bring back a person that is responsible for making you meet new people? Because it just doesn't work anymore. Like, people will not approach you, especially if you have a bad case of a resting bitch face, as I do. People will just not approach you. So I always ended up just like straight up not dancing, or just dancing with straight women, because straight men are apparently too overwhelmed by this. So if we had a master of ceremony, I'm thinking even in a non-historical context, if every party could just have one person whose sole responsibility was to make sure you're not alone and awkward, I am paying good money for this, not gonna lie. Even in private balls, no gentleman can invite a lady to dance without a proper introduction. This introduction should be effected through the lady of the house or a member of her family. Again, can we bring this rule to the clubs, please? No dancing with a lady until you're like formally introduced. An introduction given for the mere purpose of enabling a lady and gentleman to go through a dance together does not constitute an acquaintanceship. The lady is at liberty to pass the gentleman in the park the next day without recognition. That's interesting. So basically, being introduced to for a dance would be different than being introduced to in another context. You would still consider yourself to be a stranger to this person. No gentleman should accept an invitation to a ball if he does not dance. Bad news for Mr. Darcy. At the conclusion of a dance, the gentleman bows to his partner and either promenades with her round the room or takes her to a seat. Where a room is set apart for refreshments, he offers to conduct her thither. At a public ball, no gentleman would of course permit a lady to pay for refreshments. No lady should accept refreshments from a stranger at a public ball, for she would thereby lay herself under a pecuniary obligation. For these, she must rely on her father, brothers, or old friends. Okay, so some good advice here, like don't take a drink from a stranger, but then because that would make you look suspicious, is like prime Victorian logic. Good taste forbids that a lady and gentleman should dance too frequently together at either a public or private ball. Engaged persons should be careful not to commit this conspicuous solecism. Preach. Okay, this is something that really bothers me with period dramas, is you always have the main couple dance like the whole ball together or like all the time. And it's just like absolutely the heck no. Like even engaged persons would be in trouble for this. You got like two, maybe maximum three dances with your person throughout the whole ball, because otherwise people would be speaking. I have a feeling not even married people did this, because that would just be like bad etiquette, basically, because you would not allow other people to dance if they didn't have a partner. So it was good manners to dance with your partner as little as possible, basically. Dancing at the time was not about like you as a couple having fun, it was about the whole ballroom having fun. Engagements for one dance should not be made while the present dance is yet in progress. So while you're dancing with a person, they could not ask you to have the next one with you. You would have to wait until it's finished. A gentleman conducts his last partner to the supper room and, having waited upon her while there, reconducts her to the ballroom. Okay, that's a cute little tradition. So you would basically accompany the last person before the dinner break or supper break. Withdraw from a private ballroom as quietly as possible so that your departure may not be observed by others and cause the party to break up. If you meet the lady of the house on her way out, take your leave of her in such a manner that the other guests may not suppose you are doing so. Do not seek her out for that purpose. Never be seen without gloves in a ballroom, though it were only for a few moments. And now I just completely jinxed it. It is not customary for married persons to dance together in society. Several things there. First of all, oh my god, that kind of sucked. Like the only... the only occasion you had to engage in some PDA with your husband, they would just straight up not allow it. And also, a very interesting notion about not letting the lady of the house, basically not letting the hostess know that you're leaving the party, because it's going to disturb the party. And if someone notices, they might be like, oh, I'm actually going to go too. this is so different to what we believe nowadays, especially if it's a private party. If someone just gets up and leaves, it might be considered very rude. So we like to seek out the hostess or the host before we leave just to say like, oh, I'm going to go. It was so nice. Thank you. Just like that simple. But here, they were so worried that they're going to disturb the hostess or that they're just going to be trouble that they would just like straight up leave when she's not looking. Leave when not anyone's looking. This is so interesting that they had this fear of being rude, so they were rude because of it. But it only shows that so many social customs changed and have changed so much. And obviously, I mean, we don't really do balls anymore. We do more like parties or flat warming, blah, blah. All those rules are just like the opposite now. Like you would only dance with your partner in most of the cases. You would let the hostess know that you're leaving. You would invite someone not using an invitation. You would not really care if they accepted or didn't accept, or, you know, it's all very fluid and very casual. And I think in a way it must have been a bit casual back then too, because you were invited to dozens of balls. If you were in that sort of society, there would be so many parties that you had to attend and that you would probably cancel last minute because it wasn't that big of a deal. However, I'm 100% sure it did have like social consequence whether you attended someone's event or not. I mean, those were still people. So I'm pretty sure if someone was very sensitive and if you knew that someone's character could make this difficult, you would probably go to that ball just for the sake of it. But also, I know I don't really want to travel to the past, but if I could, I mean, a ball like this would be banging. I think it would be so cool. Not including my horrific lack of dancing skill and social skill at that and all of the rules that I wouldn't know, but just to witness it, you know, just to be a wallflower, just to like look at it. I am so intrigued by how it worked and how it looked and the vibe and the music and the people there. It just all seems very fascinating to me. So it's like one of the rare occasions that I would turn my rusty time machine on and just be like, okay, just take me there. I just want to see it one time. Let me know what you think. Let me know if you've ever taken a part in a historical ball and how different was it from what was described here. Anyway, that's it for today. Don't forget to check out my Patreon at patreon.com/textree if you want to support this podcast and keep it going. Thanks for everything and bye.
It's time to get organized this new year with Menards. Update your closet system and add style today with Closet Culture. Choose from two closet finishes and four colors of shelf boards to create a functional yet stylish closet solution that matches your home decor. Check out all our Closet Culture closet kits or view our weekly flyer on Menards.com to see all the great deals happening now. Save big money
at Menards. The Omaha Steaks End of Season Sale is here to deliver everything you crave to reset after the holidays. From handcrafted USDA certified tender steaks to gourmet burgers, versatile chicken and pork, and more. You know exactly what you're getting. Premium lean protein that everyone loves. Visit omahasteaks.com for 50% off site-wide during their End of Season Sale. And for an extra $35 off, use promo code AUDIO at checkout. Terms apply. See site for details.